The following Dharma talk was presented at Common Ground Meditation Center, Minneapolis, Minnesota, as part of the weekly Dharma series.
I'd like to welcome everyone. My name is Gail Iverson, and I'm filling in for Mark tonight. He is at a month-long retreat at the Forest Refuge in Barre, Massachusetts, and he will be returning on June 14th. So, before Mark left on retreat, he started a series of talks on the paramis, or the 10 perfections of the heart. And so I'm going to continue with that topic tonight. I'm going to be reviewing some of the reflections that he's done on the first parami, which is generosity. And then we'll also be starting to talk about the second of the paramis, which is sila, or morality. So I just want to start out with reading this brief excerpt from the sutta, one of the suttas, the Buddhist scriptures about the paramis. It says, enlightenment beings, or beings destined for Buddhahood, are concerned about the welfare of living beings, not tolerating the suffering of beings, wishing long duration to the higher states of happiness of beings, and being partial and just to all beings. Therefore, one, they give alms, dana, to all things so that they may be happy, without investigating whether they are worthy or not. Two, by avoiding to do them any harm, they observe morality, sila. Three, in order to bring morality to perfection, they train themselves in renunciation, nekama. Four, in order to understand clearly what is beneficial and injurious to beings, they purify their wisdom, panya. Five, for the sake of the welfare and happiness of others, they constantly exert their energy, virya. Six, though having become heroes through utmost energy, they are nevertheless full of forbearance, kanti, towards the manifold failings of beings. Seven, once they have promised to give or do something, they do not break their promise, truthfulness, sakka. With unshakable resolution, aditana, they work for the welfare of beings. Nine, with unshakable kindness, metta, they are helpful to all. And 10, by reason of their equanimity, upeka, they do not expect anything in return. So those are the qualities that will, 10 qualities that we'll be talking about over the next many weeks. So I'd just like to start by reviewing some ways that we can bring awareness and attention to the practice of dana or generosity. The first thing that we can do, just a really simple thing, is to just bring more awareness to when impulses of generosity arise within us. A lot of the times we kind of come to take for granted the generous impulses that we have, and it's really helpful for us to have a awareness and an attention brought to these, so that whatever we tend to pay attention to tends to grow. And so by bringing our awareness and attention to these impulses, it just naturally the impulses tend to increase. So we have this tendency, and it's not a bad one, to give out of habit. But by bringing our awareness to our habits around giving, we can get some more clarity around what our motivations, what our intentions are. or giving. Once we become aware of these impulses, then we can have the intention to act on them. Joseph Goldstein has made a suggestion that we act on every generous impulse that arises. And it's an interesting practice. I heard this suggestion of his many years ago and sort of had some awareness of it. And it's interesting, oftentimes for me, the first thing that will arise will be some kind of impulse that is a little too grand for and something that I'm not able to act on at this time. So then my tendency was to kind of ignore the impulse. But instead, what we can do is we can notice that whatever the first thing that arises in our mind is something that we're not willing or able to do at this time, but that we can, still the impulse is wholesome, and so we can reflect and see if we can kind of scale that impulse back to something that is doable for us at this time. Sometimes there's kind of talked about a hierarchy of giving. So like giving material things is sort of considered to be sort of the easiest level of generosity. And then giving of our time and energy is a step up, you know, a little more, involves us a little bit more, takes a little bit more commitment for us to do that. So, and sometimes when there's, there'll be a situation that is presenting itself to us that would require our generosity, and sometimes it can be quite a commitment for us. And then sometimes that can get kind of messy. But still, if we move ahead, there can be a lot that we can learn from having the willingness to sometimes take that leap and to act on the impulse to be generous or what feels to us like something that is a good direction for us to move in. A couple of years ago, a friend of our family died of brain cancer, and she had two teenage children, one who was in college and one who was in high school. And she also had a 12-year-old dog. And the dog had kind of a bad reputation. So there was not, you know, too much interest in adopting the dog, but my sister very kind and generously felt that, you know, there was so much stress on the family already that to, you know, have the dog have to, you know, be taken away would really, you know, be a great burden for them. So she decided that she was going to take on this this task. Well, it was indeed a task. She belongs to another meditation group, and one of her dear friends, who's from Sri Lanka, has said to her many times, "Maddie, this dog is a trial for you." So she's reminded every day of her commitment to, you know, the generosity that she had offered, and now she is committed to it. But, you know, it's so sometimes, you know, there's some, I wouldn't say regret, some frustration over this trial, but still, You know, there's always kind of that remembrance that this came out of, you know, that really the impulse that was acted on was a very wholesome one. And so whatever the trials are that arise around this are worth working with. And, you know, it's just interesting to notice, you know, whatever comes up in our life, there's often some frustration or irritation or whatever. And, you know, so to just be able to open to that the best that we can is, you know, is a wholesome way for us to be in our life. So that kind of is the part of the flip side of the coin of besides noticing our impulses to generosity, it's important to notice our impulses towards not wanting to share and not wanting to give. And sometimes that's appropriate. Sometimes there's a broader picture that we have to take into consideration, but it's really helpful for us to just be aware of this and not like it's something that we want to judge ourselves for or that we want to feel guilty about or shameful or, you know, like we're a bad person because we're not, you know, able or willing to feel generosity in this moment. And, you know, that's just a natural part of being human, is for those impulses to, you know, to not share or to not give to arise. And, you know, but we have a lot of small opportunities where we can kind of practice stretching our practice of giving. I know one for me is the driving practice. Driving is a great meditation practice because there's often irritations that and judgments that arise in doing that. And even just kind of silly things like, you know, not necessarily when, you know, there's actually some danger that has we've been put in by, you know, in some situation, driving situation, but minor irritations, like for me, I have a strong preference for people to use their turn signals. and it's an irritation to me. So I was noticing this when I was driving to work the other day, that there were, like, just as I left my house, there were like about three people who did not use their turn signals. And I kind of just noticed that irritation arising within me. And then, you know, when we notice that, then we have a choice. So, you know, that wasn't benefiting me, certainly. It wasn't going to help make them turn on their turn signal. I mean, they were totally oblivious of my irritation. So, you know, then it's nice to be able to be aware of these things and to have a practice where we can, you know, in that very moment, we can make a choice to do something differently. So, whatever that may be. Or, sometimes, like in the line at the supermarket, there will be, you know, some irritation, some impatience that will arise, and to be able to, you know, just maybe generate some kind thoughts towards ourselves and to the people who are around us. One of my sisters has a joke sort of concept, although she's not entirely joking, that she has. She calls it the efficiency mall. She would like to, if someone would build the efficiency mall. And in the efficiency mall, only certain people would be allowed to shop there. So it would have, anyone who was not paying attention would not be there. And, you know, like those things of when you stand in the line and, you know, like people would write out their checks before they got up to the cashier. That would be one requirement. Or they would have their debit card or their credit card, their friend, whatever they needed, they would have in their hand when they got to the cashier. And so sometimes I kind of have those wishes that, you know, if only, you know, people were being efficient. But again, you know, that's just not the nature of things. And you know, so it's more important for my internal well-being to have some kindness towards them. Now, of course, the thing is that these, you know, the anger, the irritation, the frustration, they will arise, but then, and that's not a problem, that's fine. It's the way we act on them. So, this idea of it's an act of generosity to ourselves and to other beings to have a commitment not to act out, to act those out either physically or verbally. And that's something that is possible for us to do. And, you know, maybe sometimes, of course, we won't live up to that commitment or that those expectations, but just to have that as part of our kind of base of where we want to be acting from and thinking from. One suggestion that I've read is when we decide to give something, that we can reflect on the impermanent nature of things. So we can reflect on the impermanence of the giver, we can reflect on the impermanence of the gift, we can reflect on the impermanence of the receiver of the gift. And so that can bring us more in tune with the way things are, and it can just be a way of getting more in touch with that characteristic. It's something that human beings tend not to be too fond of. We like things to last and just to remain the same. To a certain, well, we like the things that we like to last and to remain the same. And so this is kind of a way of reflecting on that misconception of ours, because the mind, even though intellectually we know that everything comes and goes, still the mind kind of has this tendency to want to hang on to things and to have the belief that if this thing that we like would last, that would make us happy. And kind of a tendency to go to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing, and in seeking this happiness. So this reflection on the impermanence of the gift, the impermanence of the giver, and the impermanence of the receiver can be a way that we can be less attached to that particular delusion that we have as human beings. Of course, sometimes there's just a natural tendency to give. There isn't sort of this conflict. There's just something that arises and it's given, and it just feels effortless and natural. And of course, that is our true nature, is to have this kind of wisdom and compassion, and it's just these guests, these visiting guests, these defilements that are covering over that that natural tendency. So that's another thing that we can be aware of, is when these things just naturally arise, and sort of really be conscious of the wholesomeness of that. I read an article not too long ago about squirrels, and they've been studying squirrels for quite some time, and they found that they are able to find pretty much all of the nuts that they bury. They know where they are, and they can find them, which is pretty amazing. But they also found that a percentage of them, again, I think it was like 15-25% of these nuts, they eat, although they know where they believe they know where they are, they don't harvest them because they are natural reforesters. And so it's kind of, that's sort of something that's built into the natural cycle of things, is this process of things being freely given, and sort of the instinct just to it's sort of an instinct to generosity, because then everyone benefits from the trees, and yet it's also a benefit to the squirrels themselves. So that's something just to kind of reflect on the generosity of nature. And this can develop an outcome of generosity is gratitude. And so just to have the gratitude of what is freely given, air is freely given, the sunshine is freely given, the rain is freely given, and so all of the elements that our lives depend on are freely given, and they're the sun shines equally on everyone, and the air is available for everyone to breathe. So it's that can be a helpful thing for us to reflect on, that that's the nature of things, is that they are freely given. And so just be a good reflection for us to see how that can manifest in our own life. So there's this flow that is happening whenever, well, in our the world we live in, this kind of dualistic reality, whenever there's giving, there's also receiving that is happening. So it's this cycle. So of course, if there was no receiver, then there would be no one to give to. So there wouldn't be generosity. So it's good also to reflect on our ability to receive things. It seems that especially in our culture, we have this kind of the rugged individual kind of attitude that, it's just a conditioning that we receive, that we need to be self-sufficient, and that's fine, but it's also important for us to be open to receiving when people give to us, and that's kind of a thing that we can play with too, just see what our reaction is to when we are given to. I found this article on the web. It was called The Generosity Path. And it had some good things to say about receiving. It says, as generous people, we need to keep in mind that giving can be potent stuff. It can carry power. In giving, we can elevate the recipient, make him, her or him feel good about themselves, or we put her or him down so that she or he feels like a beggar. In like fashion, if we are a recipient, we may accept a vulnerable position subject to the inclination of the giver. However, that risk can also bring benefits. A gift well given can carry a special recognition of you as the recipient, what you like, what has meaning for you, what might touch you. Ultimately, entering into the dynamic of giving and receiving with true generosity builds strong bonds of relationship. Why is it sometimes difficult to accept someone's generosity? For many people, there is a shame associated with needing something from someone else. In some cases, people feel free. People feel that they do not deserve the gift or care because of some personal insecurity. Many people do not want to inconvenience anyone else and might feel that they are a burden, even to those who care about them most. It is most important to be aware and conscious when someone is giving you something. That is what I call generosity in receiving. Really being in the moment, setting aside any awkwardness or embarrassment, or for that matter, entitlement. This person has gone out of their way to give you something, whether it's a chocolate chip cookie, assistance with a household repair, or significant financial resources. One is expected to be grateful, and you probably are. Really being present in the moment of time where you receive something will open the way for a reaction that will gratify the person who gave to you. So I would advise stopping in the moment, breathing in to really experience it, then think of your expression of thanks as a separate gift, a new gift related to the gift that you were just given, but separate, honoring the person who faces you. So this brings up the idea also of the importance of this giving and receiving in human relationships, experiencing the connection that occurs as a result of this this process. And I remember reading Sharon Salzberg's book on loving kindness. It's called Loving Kindness, The Revolutionary Art of Happiness. And at the beginning of each chapter, she has a quote from some author. And in the first chapter, there's just a two-word quote that says, only connect. And it's from a book by E.M. Forrester, Howard's End. And so I think that could kind of... might be sort of a mantra we could sort of keep in the back of our mind when we're going about our daily activity to think of only connecting, and that's a very in a very broad sense. It's connecting with people we come in contact with. It's connecting with the activities that we're doing. Connecting with our internal process, whatever is going on in our thoughts and our feelings, connecting and opening to that to the best of our ability, having that kind of intention that's the kind of practice that we would like to do. So, Tom, could you do me a favor? Could you go get me a glass of water? So, the mindfulness practice, that's kind of one of the basic things is this idea of receiving things however they come, opening to them, welcoming them to the best of our ability, working against that natural human tendency of pushing away whatever is unpleasant and trying to hang on to whatever, longer to whatever is pleasant, or trying to get more of what is pleasant, trying to get less of what is unpleasant. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but just to explore the other possibility of this openness and willingness to receive. I had an opportunity yesterday to and today to have some practice at this process of giving and receiving. I took my cat to the vet yesterday for some his shots, and so the. The vet was waxing very enthusiastic about the qualities of this animal. he did his exam the whole time and said, "Oh, look, he's so beautiful. He's so and so he did the exam. And said, "Oh, his ears are perfect down to the tympanic membrane. His eyes." They're perfectly healthy. His internal organs, perfectly healthy. He was going on. He writes on perfect. His nose. He was very enthusiastic. Then he says, as after he gets my cat the shots, then he says, "Now," he says, "this is really unlikely, but I have to tell you this, that if that sometimes they have allergic reactions to these, and so." If he starts scratching or throwing up or, Okay, so first you're receiving the cat praise, not that I feed the cat and I love the cat, but the cat's pretty much, his perfection is pretty much something that was just given to him by nature. But still, there was some feelings of cat pride. And just some gratitude. I mean, it's very nice to hear his enthusiasm and to receive that. So then we have to receive the this could turn into a bad situation. Not likely, but there's the possibilities. And then just feeling the thoughts and sensations that arise as a result of that. And then the thing that, and if that happens, then we won't be here, so we have to go to the emergency vet. There's this whole thing of receiving the worry and those kind of things. So then this morning when I got up, I could not find the cat. And so I thought, I should have checked on him during the night. He was okay. So then, after receiving more worry, I was just able to just sit with that for about 15 minutes, just interested to watch and see what's arising around the situation, and then just to go on with my other activities, which partly was finishing writing this talk, and I was taking care of my sister's dog, so take the dog out for a walk, and it was interesting too, because on the walk, I pretty much, the thought of the cat pretty much did not arise for that. I walked for about an hour, pretty much did not arise, but perhaps just sitting, just being aware and noticing those things arising, just sort of gave some space around it so they didn't need to be voicing themselves so continuously after that. So then when I did get home, I called and the cat indeed came out and where it was. I don't, maybe it had been in the house the whole time. And so then I was very happy. But then there was also sadness that came up. And I think it was the realization that, well, the cat did appear now, but really kind of having just seen this process, which I've seen many times, but and have been aware of, but my attachment to this this animal who I know that when at some point either I will leave him or he will leave me, and you know, there will be it will be a sad thing. And so I think unless I become enlightened by that time, which is possible, but so it's just that whole seeing that whole process and but just kind of being present for it, I think is something that makes it so you don't get so stuck in what you want and don't want and what you think is what you think you need and what you think you want and what the reality of the situation is. You just have a little more openness and acceptance of things the way they are. So I think at this point we have about a little less than 20 minutes left, so I'm going to pause at this point and see if people have anything that they would like to share in terms of their struggles or successes with giving and receiving, and really would love to hear from people. It's always nice when just to hear how things are, things that people have experienced and learned from.
Yes. Yes, I adore a lot of the life that struggles with me, but I was sort of mixed in, but and with some good friends, a lot of times people come to me for advice or like when you're in a painful situation, and I feel like at the time I can give really freely and like be there for them and connect with them, and in a way a lot of people it can't or don't want to, and I feel great about it, but then sometimes if I feel like they're not able to give that back to me when I'm struggling, then suddenly I get angry or resentful, why, you know, poor me, why is it that I'm always giving and no one will give back, and it kind of gives a self-pity thing. So I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on how to give freely at the time and then not have this hidden agenda or like judging it when you feel like people can't give you something back.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, well, I guess that it, you know, certainly it gives you pleasure, as you said, to give what you have to give, and that people receive it and are grateful for it. So, so that you know, can. Be grateful for it. And then maybe the other experience could be like a separate thing. So it's just something that's recurring as a reaction. So just to be open to those things when they arise and just, you know, not to think badly of yourself for those arising, you know, to see if there can be some gentleness and compassion towards yourself for, you know, wanting that same kind of experience for yourself, and then, you know, also sometimes we want to get back in kind what we have given, And sometimes, if we can, notice and recognize what's happening, but then maybe we can see if there isn't something that is being given. You know, maybe it's not what we're expecting, what we're wanting, but maybe there's something there that, you know, that person is giving what they have to give to the best of their ability, and you know, we can open up to that and, you know, just kind of explore. It's all sort of a attitude of courage and curiosity and investigation that we can bring to when things don't go the way we'd like them to go.
Thank you.
Thanks. Anybody else? Yes.
I have a 17-year-old daughter, and a significant part of my life, you know, I raised her by myself for the most part, and for a significant part of my life, I sacrificed, and I don't know if that's such a great word, but I gave, like, pretty much, I dumped all my money on her, and did, I mean, like, everything, you know, pretty much was devoted to investment, so to speak, thinking that, with the mindset that I do these things, then that she would, you know, be a constructive person, you know, that kind of thing, and she would, you know, be making good choices and so forth and so on, that if I did the, you know, correct things, you know, as a parent, and, you know, got her constructive activities, and, you know, I spent, you know, tons of my energy and time and just everything. And now she's doing things that I really am very disappointed in, and to a certain extent, I don't know if I necessarily want to say devastated, but disappointed at the choices, the life choices that she's making. I mean, like, I'm just like, I just can't believe it. You know, and I'm thinking, in this particular instance, I guess I just feel like this is a situation where I'm struggling with pulling back on my giving now, because I just feel like it's turned into a situation where she doesn't really respect me, and it's sort of like I keep giving and giving, and then the choices that she's making are just getting worse and worse. You know, smoking cigarettes, you know, just goofy stuff like that, which I don't, you know, particularly, and drinking and some other things. And so I just wanted to get some comments on that, you know, because I just feel like my motivation and everything, I feel was really good and everything, and but, you know, it's kind of like now she's not doing what I want her to do, you know, and so it's kind of, you know, I just decided that for myself that I'm going to be focusing on my own life now and just trying to do things that are wise, because I think that sometimes you can give and it can actually harm the person, you know, if they're just sitting there, you know what I mean? I don't want to, like, make myself into a doormat. You know, I mean, that's not appropriate. You know, so, and, you know, it's just sort of a, I think that that's probably a common thing in life, you know, probably more, you know, where parents feel like that. If you, parents, it can be a different thing. So I just wanted to get any comments about that.
Thank you for sharing that. So in this practice, we are mainly interested in our internal, focusing on what's happening internally, what's happening with our thoughts, what's happening with our feelings, and being open and accepting and non-judgmental of whatever those experiences are arising within ourselves. And so it doesn't, so by being conscious of those, by opening up to our experiences, then we, and by, so the opening up is the practicing of this non-judgmental awareness towards ourselves. And when we do that, then it helps us to see things more clearly the way things are. And so then, hopefully, our actions will come out of this this wholesome understanding that we gained through practicing this. And one of the things that we can do in a situation where we felt hurt or devastated by someone's actions, where they, you know, the actions haven't been what we've expected and wanted, is that that we can practice compassion towards ourselves first for the suffering that we're feeling, and then we can realize that person who's that isn't meeting our expectations, that person wants to be happy just like we want to be happy, and that that what their actions are, they believe, is what's going to lead them to this happiness. They're, you know, and so then we can have some compassion towards them too, just to know that they're doing what they think is best, and you know, even though we have a different perspective on it, you know, then we can work on having some compassion towards them. And also, I think what you said in terms of sometimes we can, you know, in our, I mean, we have a very good intention to help, but sometimes we don't have the level of wisdom that that is needed at that particular time, and so maybe we haven't acted as wisely as we could. And so then, yeah, it's wonderful to, you know, to see what the situation is, and then to step back and to see if we can, you know, deepen our own wisdom and understanding, and see what effect that has on our relationship. Thanks for sharing.
Anyone else have?
I can just share a little bit. My name is Liz. Thank you, Liz, for sharing today. I'm in a situation with a new job, and I had been in my previous job for many, many years, and it was just very second nature. And then I stepped into a new company, and all of these expectations are thrown at me naturally. You know, that's what happens to a new employee. I'm laughing at myself because, you know, the meditation practice has really given me a lot of insight, and I realized even tonight that I get accepted with, you know, other people and their expectations or their reactions or whatever. And anyway, I just find it real interesting that as I think about, you know what, I'm going to be leaving this position because I am pursuing something else. So when I think of, you know what, I'm going to be leaving the situation, then can react, then I, you know, then I think my reactions are getting a lot. The wisdom is coming in. So we need to talk about the impermanence of your situation. I think that lends a lot of, a lot of insight and a lot of, you know, wisdom in the situation. And, you know, you're not in the situation forever, and, you know, just that by itself is really helpful. But, I've never before been able to look so squarely at myself and see my, you know, my, I don't want to say errors, but, you know, my delusion or whatever, where I'm not being constructive in the situation, where I'm not being skillful, I guess would be a good expression. And even though I don't like, you know, when you talk about being compassionate with yourself, that's so valuable because I don't like seeing that, but unless I do see it, you know, it leads to improvement. So, anyway, I guess I'm just really delighted with, you know, this whole process. I've been in this situation for 6 months in this job, and I haven't been sleeping. You know, it has been the bane of my life. And so getting insight about it and tools for improving the situation, even if that means, may or may not mean leaving the situation. It's just, you know, it's just so valuable. Anyway, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Liz.
You talked about feeling the call towards giving. And how do you distinguish sometimes between giving and giving in? Just giving in to somebody or actually giving
think that, you know, that comes with really having an intention to be honest with our motivations and our intentions. And so, when we have the impulse to give, we can reflect and see, you know, see if we can see it. You know, we haven't been, this is a practice, so it's just that we, you know, we do the best that we can to see if we are open, we have an intention to be open to learning and to trying new ways of being in a situation. So, so it sounds like you feel like there are situations where you have, rather than giving, you've given in. And, so then when you're aware, when that comes up, you go, oh, I think in this situation, I wasn't ready to give what I gave, or maybe it wasn't a healthy, it doesn't feel like it was a healthy kind of giving, then you can see how that feels and, you know, what the thoughts are around that. And maybe then the next time that impulse, you know, that comes up, you can be more aware and maybe pause, you know, like the thing is, oftentimes we're acting so quickly. I mean, you know, life is life very. So part of what's really helpful about this practice is that we can look back and we can see situations that in retrospect we think, you know, we're pretty sure we didn't act in the best way. I mean, because in terms of the generosity, ourselves are always included. It's just like when we do metta practice, we always include ourselves, so we're like that outside the generosity equation. So then, you know, it's really helpful to, you know, maybe write or something, just to reflect back on that situation. Because while we're practicing to be in the moment and to be aware and present as much as we can, things are happening quickly. And so we can't, you know, our level of mindfulness isn't always at the level that it would need to be really skillful in that moment. So then it's helpful later on to reflect and to, you know, just to see what our thoughts and our feelings are around that situation, and then to see if it's wholesome or unwholesome. And I did a practice for a while where each night I would write on, just reflect on the day, and on one side I would write what I felt were skillful, things that I had done skillfully, and on the other side I would write things that I felt that I had done unskillfully. And that was really helpful to see that. And then actually what came out of that for me, and what's a common thing that comes out of this practice is that we're willing to see what was unskillful, and we're willing to bring our awareness in the future to acting differently around that. And then what we can see over time is, like, there was a lot of wholesome things that was present. And next week we'll probably be talking, I guess it'll be a couple of weeks, about morality. And, you know, so we start to see that, have confidence in our behavior, that there's a lot of things that we are doing skillfully, and we can build on that. So, well, we have come to the end of our time. And thank everyone for coming tonight and for your attention and for sharing.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.